Jimmy Crane, Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Jimmy Crane's an improv nerd. Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Oh, Jimmy.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Crane, and this is another episode of Improv Nerd, sponsored by the good people at Hotel Lincoln. The next time you find yourself here in the city of Chicago and you're looking for a cool boutique hotel that's close to everything, it's right across the street from the Lincoln Park Zoo, right around the corner from Second City, in minutes to Chicago's Loop. Check out the official hotel of Improv Nerd, the Hotel Lincoln. And I want to plug my award-winning improv classes, The Art of Slow Comedy, which really focuses on before you can be funny, you need to be real. And I think that all improvisation, especially your scene work, should be as easy as a conversation. This class just teaches you to slow things down so you can make that connection with your partner, so you can get everything you need for doing great scene work off your partner. My classes start in April. I have an intermediate and a advanced, and that starts in April. And I'm also offering April 4th, if you're in for Chicago Improv Festival, a two-person scene tune-up. The foundation of any good long form is two-person scenes. You gotta know how to do scene work before you do a form. So go to jimmycrane.com for more information. Okay, let's get on with the show, because we have a great episode for you. Our guest today, from Legit, from Veep, he was also on The Daily Show, he was also in Heat, where he played an albino cop, Dan Bacadal. Now, Dan is a great improviser, he's a great actor, and he's also a great friend. And something that puts a little pressure, and I feel a little self-conscious, because I know he's listening. He's a fan of the show. And I actually heard from a friend of ours that he actually listened to five episodes. This is a rumor, so it's not confirmed. He listened to five episodes before he did the show. Dan has been so supportive of this podcast, I cannot tell you. And I was just so honored that he wanted to do the show. And it's so cool when one of your friends, a peer, appreciates what you do. Because you know me, I have a low self-esteem. Sometimes I don't think this is that big of a deal. I'm just doing a podcast. And I really appreciate that from Dan. Dan is so honest in this episode, from talking about when he went back, when he came into Chicago to do this show, couple nights before he did the improv set at ETC, and he tells us about his insecurities while he was on stage. He talks about being fired at Second City. He talks about how they didn't renew his contract at The Daily Show, and how he felt about that. Dan also talks about his philosophy on improv and how he improvises. I love how he broke down taking the suggestion. This is such a great episode, and I'm saying this because when I envisioned doing this show, starting this podcast, this is what I was going for. People talking about improv theory, love it. I love it. It's very important to the show, but also their insecurities, because that's what inspires me. He talks about being hurt and how he reacts to being hurt. He talks about his anger. He talks about all of this stuff, and all of this stuff to me is like, and I've said this before, improvisation is such a personal art form. So any baggage we have in life, we are bringing it up on stage, if we know it or not. And the more we're in touch with that, and we know, when I'm hurt, I get angry. The more we know this kind of stuff, the better we can be on stage. That's my experience. I don't want to get lectury or teaching. I want you to listen to this episode because it's amazing. And I am so proud of it. And I love Dan Bacadal. So here it is, the Dan Bacadal episode.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd. Oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
Dan Bacadal.
Thank you. Thank you. Take a seat.
Yes.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Hi, guys.
Great. All right, now, are these working? Are these all set? These are.
Yeah, let's not have another one of these Bill Arnett debacles.
Yes, we did. So even though this is says, oh,
for
it's
those
peaking,
of you that listen,
yeah,
to the podcast,
you are a huge fan of the podcast.
I love this,
which scares
podcast
me. What do you love about it?
Well, Jimmy, I mean, it's I love you, first of all.
Well, thank you. I love you, too.
And I love the way that you do it.
Okay.
But I love... this is so dumb. But I'm a nerd when it comes to improv. I mean, I've been... from the moment I first saw it performed, I wanted more. I wanted to know how it worked. I wanted to know, how did they do that? How can I do that? How can we do something else? How can we break it? How can we fix it? How can we change it?
You know what I love about you? You're really honest. Because, like, backstage we talked about jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I've had people on, and you've heard.
Yeah.
You know, you say jealousy, especially if you're in L.A., if you say you're jealous, people don't want to answer that question.
No, I'm not jealous.
Are you jealous?
Me?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Jimmy, God, yes, of course. I could be, I mean, I'm jealous of you.
What are you jealous of me about?
I'm jealous that you get to do this.
Okay.
You know, I'm jealous of, I went down and saw the ETC cast last night.
At Second City?
Yeah, I was jealous of them because they were enjoying it, and I didn't, when I did the main stage, I didn't enjoy it, so I was jealous. I mean, I'm, you know. I'm not saying it's healthy.
Okay.
But it's the truth.
Because, when you got The Daily Show, I was really jealous of that.
Sure. We both auditioned the same night.
Yes.
Remember? You
yes.
gave me a big hug.
Yeah. I did?
Yes, you did.
All right. Well, I was jealous. It was a jealous hug.
It felt a little chilly, but it was... You know.
And the other thing I love about your honesty, you were talking about, you did the... Can you just tell us when you went to go to the set at ETC? Now, here...
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so... when you go to do the set on these stages, particularly if you've done that stage before, you know, you go through and you go, this is a stage I've worked on before, I have nothing to fear. And I walk up there and they do the whole, well, I'm from legit, blah, 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 this and that and the other thing. The
now, audience does that goes, make you nervous?
No, I love that.
Okay.
Because then the audience does the thing that I've always wanted, which is yay! And they don't care if they've ever heard of you or not. You could make up fake credentials and send out a hippopotamus and they cheer because they've been programmed that these six young people are very nice and I trust them and I like them and I'll do what they tell me to do. And so they cheer and I come out and I go like, yeah, like that. And
what is that?
I don't know. I don't know. I was nervous
okay.
doing like a, he is my thing. You know, you ever seen Jack McBrayer walks out on stage and Jack McBrayer goes,
he kind of does right? that champion with his
yes.
hands thing. Yeah,
and
I'm just doing it for the podcast
yes,
audience because yeah,
and I was on
audio video.
To me, ETC is Jack's stage. I don't know why. It was that was where I saw him perform, and to me, that was his stage. And for
do you
some
think
reason,
he's really
felt,
that nice in real life? I mean, he has such a positive energy.
He's always been really nice to me.
Me too.
Yeah, except the one time that I said, "What's with the?" He was in New York, and I said, "What's with the white T-shirt, Jack? I like Chicago Jack better than New York Jack." And he went, "Geez, Dan." Like that, and I went, oh my God, I'm sorry. That was about the meanest I think I ever saw. Anyway.
He's got to have a dark side, but he is the nicest guy.
Everybody yeah. does.
Right.
So I walk out on the stage. I do the X with my fingers thing, because I don't know what it means. And then I lean up against the wall, and I'm like, yeah, this is going to be great. This is going to be great. I'm not going out there. I can't perform with these people. I don't know these people. This audience doesn't like me. They don't want me here. Oh, I got an idea. No, that's a shitty idea. And then Michael Lehrer steps out and does something, and I go, that was exactly the idea I was going to do, and it killed. Shit, I should have gone. Now I didn't go. Now it's been three scenes. Now it's weird if you do go. Now if you do go, they go, who the fuck's this bald guy? You know? And then I just sit back, and I go, oh, my God. And then I feel that coaxing kind of... loving pat on the rump from, you know, a cast member or my own mind going, get out there, you know. The very first set I did, Jim Zulevic was a guest, also guesting, you know, the cast would have been...
this is the Second City, right?
Yeah, on main stage. It would have been Tammy Sager and Kevin Dorff and... I want to say it was like Psychopath Not Taken, so TJ Jagodowski.
Okay.
Know. Some people that I had performed with, some people I hadn't performed with in Armando. And I'm not going out there. First of all, it was, would you like to come up and do the set? Can't, guys, I'm wearing sandals. I purposely wore sandals so I couldn't do the set. Now, there's no rules. You can show up and do the set in a SEAL costume and they don't give a shit. If they've invited you, you can do it. Can't do it, guys, I'm wearing sandals and that's against my rules. And so the next time I came, I forgot to wear a costume that would keep me from going. And Tammy said, come on, please play. And I said, all right, fine. And I went up and I played. And I was Velcroed to the wall. And Jim Zulevic, who I didn't know at all, went, eh, and dragged me out there and started a scene with me. And I was quaking. going, yes, and something terrible. Tap, tap, Kevin Dorff taps me out, and I go to the back line, and I go, I'm never fucking doing this again. I'm never coming back to these sets. I'm never setting in again. I'm not doing this.
So after the set last night at ETC,
yes.
How do you feel after it? And what do you do to...
Well, what's funny is I don't walk off and go, oh, my God, I blew it. I walk off and I go, how about that? I managed to not fuck it up. You know, I managed to stay out of the way. I didn't. This is one thing I'll say about my journey as an improviser is in the old days, when I was a student at Second City in the training center, I went up and did the jelly.
Which was a jam.
Instead of doing the jam, because they did the jam at I.O. And fuck I.O., so we're doing the jelly. And it was Pat McKenna was one of the hosts, and I can't remember who the other host was. I know who he is, but I can't remember the name. But and they did a thing where it was like musical option or something, and I got the suggestion of Braveheart and Metallica at Blockbuster. And so I found Braveheart, and I said, here it is. Freedom! Never take our freedom! Which is a pretty good fucking Metallica.
Yeah.
I didn't say so. And You'll Never Take Our Freedom, which is Braveheart. And I think this kills. And the audience is like, what is wrong with this? And it was like I took a huge chance and failed miserably in front of an audience that didn't know me and I didn't know them and this wasn't me. And I went, well, that's it, man. I'm done taking chances. So from then on, I didn't take chances anymore. I'd come out and I'd go, hello. Yes, hi. Oh, here's that thing you asked for. And they go, ah, what is it? And I go, oh, open it. I'm not going to fuck this up. You fuck this up.
Do you ever have that thing and where you think you're going to say a line, in your head you're like, this is going to get a huge laugh, and it doesn't?
Yes, Jimmy.
Okay.
Does anybody ever sit here and tell you they don't?
I
ask don't. Everybody that question, because I'd love to hear the fucking liars who say they don't. Because you fucking know they do. You know they sit there and they go, yeah, this is the one. This is the line. This is the line. And then they walk out there and they do it, and sometimes it kills, and they're walking back, they're patting themselves in the back, and sometimes they go to the back line, and they go, this audience, fuck.
But I always go into like a shame thing. Like, I deliver the line, I think it's going to get a laugh. It doesn't. Then there's that like 6 or 7 minutes. It's almost like the thing about death, you know, like you warn it, you know.
Time slows.
Yeah. It's like you got to go through all those phases. Like you're depressed, you got to forgive, all that stuff in like 6 seconds, you know.
Yeah. And then acceptance of the death of your idea.
Right. Yeah. All right. So in high school,
yes.
You started out, and this is kind of, you got interested in acting. You get cast in the show. It's like about the princesses or prince or something like that. And then a couple days before the show, what happens?
I think it was day of the show. It was
okay.
Like, wow, the show's tonight? And I said, yeah, I'm not doing it. And they said, well, you can't quit. And I said, well, yeah, I'm not doing it. Take care, you know. And I just quit the play. And at the time, it was like, this is dumb, man. They got me wearing like chiffon and, you know, purple crown. I'm not doing that. I'm too cool. My friends play football, you see, so I'm cool. And I just didn't go.
And then you come to Chicago after graduating college. You take acting again,
yeah.
And you're successful there.
Yeah.
And you get into the training center, and this thing about quitting right before to go to the next level happens again.
Yeah, first it happened at Players Workshop at the Second City.
Okay.
Which I took classes there, and I did levels 1, 2, 3, 4. And then the writing level came, where it's, we're going to create a show, and I said, all right, you guys, I got to go. I got to go, I'm doing a play. I got to quit. And they were like, you've been doing plays the whole time. I said, yep, well, this one, it's different. I can't be there. I wish I could. And I back out, and I quit. And I went over to the Athenaeum and watched them do their show. A couple times, almost like I was part of the group, but in the audience, like watching, that could have been me. I could have done that. All I had to do is show up and do nothing, and I would have been in the show. And I couldn't do that. How many people have cried on your podcast?
Well, it's interesting you say that. No, it's interesting you say that because you put something on Facebook. I'm going to be on Improv Nerd, and I'm going to get teary-eyed.
Yeah, here's the thing.
Do you have regret about that?
Well, yeah, because I look at, You know, I don't think that anything would have happened with the Martin County High School Fighting Tigers school play. And I don't think that fame and fortune were going to come from impressing Joe Forsberg and David Murphy. Oh, Dave. Over at Players Workshop. But I did have friends in that class. I had relationships with the people in that class. We hung out together, you know. And they forgave me. They didn't care. They were like, whatever, dude. You know, I'll do Sylvester Stallone. Fine. And but there was a part of me sitting in the audience going, you fucked these people over. And out of guilt, I came and watched the show 3 or 4 times to be like, but I'm still here. I still support you.
Is it the sadness that you couldn't join them?
No, I think... I'm not sure. I haven't analyzed it that far.
We can do it in the next...
No, I hear you, man. I mean, it's a good question. I think what it is now who I am today, Jimmy, I think the sadness that I have now about it is that I treated people that way, that I was that fast and loose with somebody else's friendship, the connection, the bond that they had. It'd be like, if I bailed on this tonight, it wouldn't be, no offense, but it wouldn't be about the people that are in the audience or the people that listen. It'd be about, I fucked Jimmy, you know? It'd be like, this is a friend of mine that I fucked over. It wouldn't be, I missed the opportunity to be on Improv Nerd. It wouldn't be the audience members or the people at the theater or the people listening. It would be, I screwed a friend, and that's really what that thing
How did that change?
Well, it didn't change until I quit getting loaded all the time.
Because you drank a lot, and yes. you were an everyday pot smoker, right?
Yeah. All day, every day.
Okay.
Yeah, I smoked. What's so funny about that? That's how it's done, man. I mean, not smoking pot all day, every day. Just quit and let the professionals do it. Because you're just a poser. Smirk.
And you, I mean, you did that. You got hired at Main Stage, right?
Yeah.
And you,
yeah.
and then you were smoking and doing that all through that, right?
Yeah. I lived up in Roscoe Village. Doesn't matter. But I would go to the Brown Line, Addison Brown Line station, and I'd stand there, and I'd be like, no train coming, and I'd smoke a little weed while I waited for the train, and the train would come, and I'd get on the train, and I'd listen to Pink Floyd or Iron Maiden, and I'd write some ideas for the rehearsal that was happening 45 minutes from now. And I would show up at rehearsal, and I'd be like, I got some ideas, man! And you know, some of them were great, and some of them were shit, just like everybody. Some of them were great, and some of them were shit. Except... There was some kind of fear going on in me that was like, if I took the time to sit down and actually try and fail, well, then it's over. But if you don't try and you fail, you can go, well, I didn't really try. Give me a second chance and I'll try this time, you know?
And there was never a second chance. Well, I mean, because I can totally relate to this. Don't put the effort in because you won't be disappointed.
I believe Bart Simpson said it best. Homer gave him some advice and he said, can't win, got it. Can't win, don't try. You know, and that's it, boy. You know, and that was really the thing. And it wasn't even a joke. It was, I can look at it now. I didn't realize then that I had quit the school play and I had quit Players Workshop before the show was written. And I also quit the Second City Training Center before we wrote our show. And I had friends in that class, too. And we were just about to go into 5, and we had a good director. I don't remember who it was. It doesn't matter. And I went... Sorry, guys, I got really busy. I got to go before we wrote that review, you know, your graduation review. So I didn't get the pizza party with the beer and the red T-shirt with the script writing Second City on it. I don't have one of those. I got a few other things I should probably return.
Like what? Did you steal from them?
No.
Was that a joke? That
no, I was just kidding. I probably did steal shit. I can't remember now.
Well, cause
I know I used to get high during intermission.
Of the main stage show.
Of the main stage show. On like Friday and Saturday nights, they do 2 shows. It wasn't really intermission. It was in between the 2 shows. It'd be like, Brian Boland's going to go to the gym and run on the treadmill. And these people are going to go, you know, over here and do this thing. And this person's going to go be creative and write something. And I'd go up to the training center and read Moby Dick and smoke a joint. And then I'd come back down for the second show. Hey, guys, I got a great idea for that improv.
Did people ever call you on it?
No, that's the kind of the scariest part is, like, I guess when you're high all the time, nobody knows when you're high because you're high all the time, you know?
And then you do one show there,
yeah,
one main stage show, and then there's kind of there's a controversy about you quitting. Can you explain?
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, yeah,
IMDb and Wikipedia. Yeah.
I know.
Can you believe this? Here you have done all this stuff, and IMDb and Wikipedia still go back to Second City.
Notorious for having quit the Second City over creative differences.
Right.
Yeah. Well, what happened was the Second City got a. I don't know, it's a creative licensing deal or something with a big studio to make TV shows based on, or films or whatever, based on Second City content. So they could go back through the archives, the 50-year history, at the time the 45-year history, and they could take anything from there and turn it into a TV show. And if that happened, then they would give us, you know, they found something they liked and they were able to develop it, and I'm paraphrasing loosely off of my hazy memory of it. Then they would, of course, have to pay for that, right? And then the Second City would have to pay whatever cast that was. So if they took the archival scene, you know, Pictionary from Stephen Colbert, et cetera, or Carell, et cetera, and turned that into a film, Steve Carell and the rest of his cast would have split six ways the money that Second City was going to give them. Not the money that Second City was going to keep for themselves. The money that Second City was going to give them. So Second City is going to get this big, fat fucking check and give a nice little check to the six, and then the six are going to split it up, right? And what happened was they came to town and they said, we want to do, a showcase. And they invited they came and saw the ETC show, the main stage show. They invited the entire ETC cast. So that was Frank Caietti and Peter Gross and Matt Craig, Rebecca Drysdale, et cetera, Jen Bills. Their whole cast, love them, fucking love them. Let's take them to LA, we're going to do a showcase. Came to see our show, and they invited me and three other people. Now that's four, and there's six people on the cast. So on principle alone, I said, I don't want to be a part of this, because if you're not going to include my cast members, then go fuck yourself, you know? And that was, I probably said it pretty close to those words. Fuck it, I don't want to be a part of it if you're not inviting everybody. And they said, okay, fine, which wasn't the response I expected.
What did you expect them to say?
I thought they'd go, yes, Dan, okay, we'll do it. We'll invite the other two. We're so sorry we offended you.
But you also talked about, you also said that at this time you had some entitlement going on.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a lot, yeah. I thought I was God's gift to pieces of shit. Like, I thought I was the greatest piece of shit that ever lived. And so shouldn't you worship me? Because I'm terrible.
I understand the piece of shit part, because I can relate to that, but how does the, you know, like, I'm a piece of shit, worship me?
Yeah, it's the old egomaniac with an inferiority complex.
Okay,
thing. So I suffered from that pretty strongly. So they said, okay, fine, whatever. And the studio said, we want to use this scene off the current main stage review.
Which was one of your scenes.
And it was a scene that I had helped create with Liz Kukowski, who had gone on to write at SNL. And it was really Liz's idea. She brought it in and said, let's improvise this. I said, great. We improvised it. It was caught on tape. That's what you do. They tape the rehearsals. And then we improvised, and that's how we wrote it. And they took that scene and gave it to two of my cast members, neither of which had anything to do with the creation of the scene. It's going to be a problem for me. Then they didn't tell me that they were using that scene, which is also going to be a problem for me. Then those two are going to go to L.A. on a night that I'm doing the main stage show, doing the scene that I wrote on stage with an understudy for an understudy. I'm going to have a problem with that. And then on the night that I found out, I'm backstage, and those two actors are talking about it. And I go, what are you guys talking about? And they go, and I said, oh, this is that showcase thing, isn't it? Can you be respectful of the people who didn't get invited, you know? And they go, and I went, holy shit, you're doing Tax Cut, aren't you? And they went, ha, blah, 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 blah. And I went, motherfucker. And I went on stage. I was supposed to. I didn't walk on stage in the middle of something I'm not supposed to be in. I continued to do my job. We were doing a song and dance about electing Al Sharpton president. It made complete sense. And at the end of the number, when everyone goes, vote for Al, and then it goes to dark, to black, I went, fuck this place, as loud as I possibly could.
But really angry and really rageful.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing it nice.
I mean, it was, you know, I don't want to do it, you know, hurt myself. I mean, it was like, the crowd is going, yeah! And I went, fuck this place!
Right.
Like that, as loud as I could. And I walked up stage, punched the wall, which is Luon. It's nothing. But I
What's Luon?
Luon is just like flimsy, like fiberboard. Okay. It's nothing. I should go right through it.
Right.
But I found the stud and I broke my hand.
Oh.
Yes, thank you. God.
That's what you wanted from Second City.
10 years yeah, I've been waiting for someone to go, ooh. Yeah. Thank you. See what they did? And that's what I said. I went backstage and I said, look at what you did. Look at what you did. And I held my bloody hand up at everyone. Everyone's like, the fuck is wrong with you? What are you doing? We went back on stage and I finished the show with my hand under my leg as it bled and swelled. And I finished the show like this. Yeah, I have a question. How come I'm not another? Yeah. Oh, that's good. Oh, yeah, let's go in the next room. Okay. And everyone's looking at me like, why are you phoning in this entire show right now? What's happening? Only two people know why I'm pissed off. It's the two that were talking. And the other ones are going, what the fuck's wrong with this guy?
Well, they don't. Some people don't know you did something with your hand, right?
But everyone knew I did something with my hand because I'm literally right, like, right. Like, you know? But they don't know why and so forth. So at the end of the show, I'm backstage in the dressing room, and I'm son of a this, and mother that, and effing this.
And you could get real angry in those days.
Yes.
I mean, like,
I
scary, still, scary angry.
I still can.
Right.
Ask my kids.
But, okay.
And I, you know, I unleashed, man. I was, I know now, Jimmy, that I was hurt and afraid. I was afraid that I didn't matter enough to be, to have my feelings considered. Doesn't excuse the behavior. I'm not saying it does. I'm just saying that's where I was. And I was really, really hurt. Anyway, so I let fly with a bunch of shit. Hurtful language that I thought would, oh, you're going to hurt me? I'll hurt you. So, and Jeff Garland was there to select some of our cast to be a part of his movie. Obviously, crazy guy with broken hand is not going to be a concern. Who just phoned in that second act? I don't know what's wrong with that guy. He's terrible. Anyway, and he goes, what's your problem? And I said, these fucking people. And he goes, look, quit. You know, who cares? Nobody cares. You know, you did the show. Quit. So what? Who cares? You know, you did it. You got the credit. Quit. And I said, you're fucking right. And I left before the set. Now, you don't do that. You stay for the set. If you're dying, you do the set, and then you go home and die. You don't walk. That's part of the show. You have to do the set. And I left. And I went straight to the bar, and I found people that would understand me and coddle me and tell me I was right. And they went, what the fuck is wrong with you? And, you know, two weeks later, I came back with a cast in my hand to start the job again, and we were sitting down to sign contracts for the next review. Second City had basically gone, okay, fine, whatever. You're upset. Good. You're going to do the next show, right? And I said, yeah, sure, you know. And we sat down to write, to sign contracts. And Mick Napier was going to be the director, and I was thrilled because I had worked with Mick in Vegas. And we sat down to sign him, and that old determination to quit came back. And I went, I don't want to do this. You know, now, there was a lot of things mixed up in there. One was I was really tired of my own behavior based on I was completely out of control, obviously.
And you knew you were out of control.
Yeah.
With the drinking and the
drug. I was becoming aware,
and the pot smoking.
Yeah, I was becoming aware of the fact that I had no control over any aspect of my life anymore, and that I was really kind of a slave to getting hammered. And I also knew that, like, I couldn't write a good show, and I don't want to fail with Mick. So I'm not going to do that either.
So it was fear, really, right?
Yeah, 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 of course. And then what tipped it for me was, and this turns into me bashing Second City again, and I'm not, that's not my intention. We've made up, I think we did. Hopefully they're not mad if they hear this. They're not listening.
No, they don't listen.
Anyway, if they were, things would be different. We were sitting there getting ready to sign our contracts, and the stage manager, who had been there 25 years at the time, said, excuse me, I haven't taken a vacation in 25 years. And the equity rep was there, and she goes, uh-huh. And he goes, should I get paid for that back vacation? And she said, oh my, yes, you should definitely be compensated. And he said, well, I've never been compensated for any of that. And I went, that's it. I'm fucking out of here. And I stood up, and I didn't say a thing. I just stood up, and I crumpled my contract. And they said, what are you doing? And I said, I can't do this. And they said, what? I said, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this. And I walked out.
How do you feel about it today, if you could have done it over again?
I would have waited until we were done with that meeting. I wouldn't have broken my hand.
Okay.
I wouldn't have flipped out that night. I would have said, interesting information that I just pulled out of you. Thank you very much. I might still have skipped the set because I was too emotional. I would have called for a meeting the next day with producers, and I would have said, here's what's happened, here's what it feels like, and here's how I would like to be compensated for my pain and suffering or losses. And if you can't do that, that's okay. I'll go. I did have that conversation with them, but it was, you fuckers broke my hand, and now you've been really there. And I'll tell you what, if you make me do that show on the night to go to L.A., I quit. And
were you high before you went to the meeting?
Yes, Jimmy.
Okay. Do you think that this was your bottom? Or close to it?
No, my bottom came with family. You know, I mean, it was like I had swept up all the shit of work and said, there you go, there's that. Now let's go home and drive the wife nuts for a couple months, and then let's go home to Florida and see the family for Christmas, and then go around the room and go, you fucked me up, and you watched, and you didn't help, and you fucking pushed the buttons, and you got... And I was sitting on a porch by myself, and they were all inside on Christmas Eve, and I went, wow, I just kicked my whole family inside. And I went, I guess that's it. You're out of things to fire. You know, you're fired, Dan. You know, I was the only thing left. It was me or just go alone, you know.
So you stop drinking, mm-hmm. stop doing drugs, and yeah. then you get a job, you get an opportunity
yeah.
to do the Daily Show.
Yes. The Daily, I get a call from Sharna Halpern, I don't know what you'd call her, the Gorgon of Improv Olympic or IO, uh-huh. the snake-headed female monster lady. Everyone's scared. I'm scared to death of her, but I can't.
I am too. Are you afraid?
I don't know why I'm so scared of her.
I am too.
I don't look her in the eyes.
I'm afraid of her anger.
Yeah.
Because have you ever gotten...
I've never gotten her anger. I've gotten the, what do you want me to do, Dan? And I went like, oh, fuck you. And I hung up, you know?
Well, you
like,
had the time where you were... And I hope I'm not talking out of school.
No.
But with it, you were on the phone for like an hour
yes.
because you were doing Trainwreck
yes.
with Ed Furman and then something like this. And you were like on the phone with her for like an hour and
yes.
a half or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's another story. she called and she said, we had had our little breakup, dust up, anger thing.
Right.
We made up after that. And she said, hey, the Daily Show's coming to town on Wednesday and I want them to see you. And I said, oh my God, thank you so much. She said, there's three scripts. You prepare two of them, you know, dressed accordingly. Great. And Thursday, SNL's coming and I want them to see you. And I said, oh my God, thank you. She said, we're going to be doing an Armando for them. What would you like to do, play or do monologues? And I thought, there's probably 12 people playing, and she's asking me what I want to do. And I said, well, I want to do monologues. This is what I always want to do. That's mm-hmm. just what I like to do. Anyway, and I'm also shooting a DVD on Saturday on how to do the Herald, and I want you to be a part of that. And I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Now, this is about 4 months after I quit drinking, maybe 2.5, 3 months, you know, and I went, what is happening? Like, my life is transforming in a way that I didn't imagine that much. I knew that what would happen was you won't wake up with a hangover anymore and you won't wonder where that bruise come from.
Right.
You know, and you won't go, what happened to my bank account?
Oh, and here's my jealousy. It's like I had stopped drinking a long time ago
yeah.
and it's like, my God, he stopped in a week and he's doing the Daily Show. You know?
It's okay, Jimmy. Be careful what you wish for. I was miserable at the Daily Show.
Why were you so miserable at the Daily Show? I
had the same problem. I had the same thing. I got there and I was like, I can't do this. I don't belong here.
But you said even at the audition, you didn't think Jon Stewart liked you.
I don't think Jon Stewart ever liked me. And if he's listening, you're a fucking dick. Don't edit that out.
I'm not editing it out.
I know you. I listen off.
Why do you think he was such a fucking dick to you?
I don't know. I don't think he was a fucking dick to me.
Okay.
I think that what I always say is I think that John hired me based on my tuba playing skills, and then he said, okay, here's a bassoon. And I went, I don't play the fucking bassoon. And he goes, oh God, I don't have time for you. And I went, I play the tuba, dude. You know that. You should play. And then you have to. I went, I don't fucking do that. I don't know how to do that. And part of it was the fear of maybe I could do that, but I think that's bullshit and I don't want to do that. And if I try and fail, then I failed at something I thought was bullshit and I don't want to fail at something I thought was bullshit. I don't want to fail, period. And I'm failing anyway. Can't win, don't try.
So when you got, they didn't re-sign your contract after 2 years.
Right, that's what happened. I didn't get fired. They just didn't re-sign my contract. Let's be clear.
Did he say anything to you?
No, nothing.
How did you feel about that?
I was pissed, which I understand now means I was afraid of something. They came to my office and they said, I was leaving the next day.
You didn't enjoy it anyways,
no,
right?
I didn't enjoy it. Right. I enjoyed meeting the White Stripes and Bill Clinton and getting Kurt Vonnegut to sign my book and things like that. But the show's brilliant, but it's not my style. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just not. I'm not political. I don't care. Leave me alone. Mm-hmm. I don't want a fucking prison. I don't want a fence around my prison. Leave me the fuck alone. Mm-hmm. You don't have to come to town and make fun of me about it. Mm-hmm. Fuck you. Go away. Mm-hmm. No offense to people who love the show, which is, you know, everybody.
I think it's like 1.2 million.
Yeah. You're right. It's only 1.2 million.
Right.
It's only 1.2 million, which is like 3 times as many people as watch the show I'm currently on.
Right.
Anyway. When they came and they said, I was going off to shoot a movie in 2 days, a movie that nobody ever saw. And my last field piece had been edited and shot. My most current field piece had been edited and shot. And one of the executive producers came and said, hey, your piece looks great. Thank you. And you're leaving in 2 days. Yeah. And when you come back, there's going to be a writer's strike happening. Yeah, I heard about that. And we're not going to renew your contract. So if you want, you can empty your office out now. And I just kind of thought, oh, you chicken shit pricks. You fucking assholes. I have a 4-month-old kid. My dad died 5.5 months ago. Not that these are reasons not to fire somebody, but fuck you. You know, fire me in the new year, pay me for 1.5 months, and then let me go. Give me a little fucking space. Anyway, and I didn't say that. I went, wow, really? Why? And she goes, well, you yourself have admitted that you're not really getting it. And I said, yeah, but I think I get it better than this fucking guy. And I pointed at the wall at the office of the guy that was next to me who doesn't get it, but it doesn't matter.
Is he still on the show?
Yeah, he's still on the show. Anyway.
You're not going to tell us who it is?
It doesn't. No.
Okay.
No. I, no.
Okay.
Who's that?
Because he will be listening.
Yeah, but if you guess, I would say yes.
Okay.
Nobody that's good, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of really good people there who were fantastic. This guy was no good. He didn't belong there. Anyway. And I said, okay, I get it. I'm not going to fight you. I'm too tired, and I get it. I'm not going to fight. Is John going to come by to say goodbye, to say thank you? I mean, like, I didn't think that was... And I'm not sure how I feel about it now, but back then I didn't think that that was me asking for a lot. I thought that was, I had a life here in Chicago that was turning around and looking pretty good, and I was working and I had people that I loved and a support network. And I picked that up and moved it to New York for you to do your show. And I know that you gave me a job. So there you go. You gave me this, I gave you that. You still have your job and your thing, so you lost nothing, and now I have nothing. You're not even going to come by and say thank you. And she said, quote, look, Dan, the CEO doesn't come down to the mailroom to say goodbye to every guy that leaves. And I said, hey, fucking excuse me. I'm not a mailroom guy. We work together. You know the nature of a correspondent on that show is, yes, you are John's, you know, you're under John, obviously. It's not the Daily Show with Dan Back at all. It's the Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And then there's the correspondents, and they rotate constantly, you know. But we do work together, and I wrote a lot of stuff on that show and got zero credit for it. Know this, that when you watch a field piece, the words coming out of that correspondent's mouth are probably around 50 to 60% theirs, 10% John's, and that other 40% is some writers and producers and so forth, you know. But a lot of that is what's coming out of the improvised brain of the correspondent. Zero fucking credit for that. Fuck you. Now, this is where I went right back to the Second City thing where I went, who's advocating for me in this case to stick up for me to say, you know, this, you have some ownership here. Have no ownership. And I said, okay, well, do me a favor then. Tell him he's a coward. And she said, now, Dan. And I said, you're right. Tell him he's a little coward. And she said, Dan. And I said, you can go. And then she left. And then I packed up all my shit and I called my wife. And then I bought a pack of cigarettes because I hadn't smoked in like a year. And then I called Miles Stroth and I said, I'm moving to Los Angeles. Let's start working together again. We work together out here forever. And he said, awesome, I can't wait till you get here. And I went home, I got the car, I picked up all my stuff, I brought it home. The next night I came and did my last field piece. I went around the building and shook hands and said goodbye to everyone that was a friend or an advocate.
Now, when you tell me that story, sadness is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
What's sad about that for you?
Because Daddy didn't love me, you know. I mean, I hate to get, you know, what is it, Freudian? Or, you know,
our audience will figure it out.
Therapeutic about it, but I mean, it's like that really was what it was. It was like, geez,
you wanted his approval.
Of course, I wanted his approval. I mean, it's fucking, it's Santa Claus. You know, you work for Santa Claus. Everybody loves this.
You
guy,
think you know? I don't want to? I'm going to get into John's head. I don't care. Do you think he was capable of giving it to him?
No,
because
no,
I don't think I don't think he gave it to Colbert or Carell. Do you think he did?
No, nope, not
you
at
know,
all. Not at all. Which is okay. I mean, I think I was accurate. I was just inappropriate. I think he's a coward, but it was inappropriate. It's not for me to say, you know? I mean,
have you talked to him since?
No, God, no.
Well, if you saw him, what would you say to him?
John, can I talk to you for a second? I just want to apologize for the things that I've said. I don't think I gave you my all when I was in your employ. And I wish I would have behaved differently, and I acted childishly on my way out, and I hope you can forgive me. And if I can make it right, I would love to. And I understand if you can't do that.
I don't think you have to worry because John listens to it. And I think
thank God.
I think he heard it.
Thank God.
Okay, let's improvise.
I forgot we were going to do that.
Great. So can we have what do you want to start with? A suggestion?
I like a line of poetry.
A line of poetry.
A thing of beauty.
A thing of beauty. Now, when you hear that, what goes on in your head?
Oh, good.
Okay.
Yeah, talking about improv. Yeah. Oh, thank you.
John, can you bring the lights down just a little?
Oof.
Thank you. Great.
Well, when I hear, I always ask for the line of poetry or a lyric from a song.
Right.
Because I know that there's going to be at least one key word in there that the person isn't going, dildo.
Right.
Like, they're not going to, not that I think Jerry's going to do that to us anyway, but that, like, you know, I feel like it protects us from bullshit suggestions, and it forces people to give something that's going to have at least one really good word in there, and the word I hear is beauty. So when I hear beauty, I go parlor.
Okay.
You know, I almost do like a word association thing.
Okay.
I go beauty, parlor, great.
So you go, you take that and you break it down for an environment.
And then I go character.
Okay, then what's, so you got the environment, then what do you do in terms of character?
I go character. So what I do character is, if it were one of those shows where I'm standing up.
Okay.
If it were one of those shows where the light, where we took the suggestion and then the lights went down.
Okay.
I would have a pose.
Okay.
And that would be my character. And that's
so
what
you're getting,
I go physical character right away.
How do you get a character off that? So just, for people that can't see what you're doing.
It looks like I'm resting my hands on top of my giant belt buckle a la Scott Adsit.
Okay, great. And so, what comes out of there into character?
To me, it's a woman or a gay man. I feel like I'm like, oh my God, where did I put my scissors? You know, that's what I feel like. And I'm not saying I'm a gay man or I'm a woman. I am who I am.
We'll discover.
And if someone says, "Hey, Mark," fine, I'm Mark.
Okay.
You know, and if they say Betty, fine, I'm Betty. I don't give a shit. To me, it's the energy, the personality, the physicality. I love a specific word that's not loaded from some, I can't wait till they ask for the suggestion so I can say Monica Lewinsky.
Right.
You know, old school.
Right.
I'm old school, too.
Yeah, you're totally old school. So the physicality part I think is really interesting. So you get the environment off that, and then your body just goes to that motion off that?
Yeah, I mean, what happens is, it's funny because I have a thought, right? So I hear a thing of beauty, and I try to keep the whole thing because I think maybe you'll use the whole phrase later. But right now I'm just thinking beauty, and what comes over me, and this is, thank God this is only listened to by other improvisers.
Right.
Because this sounds ridiculous. Well, what comes over me is almost like a shudder of like, where is it? Where is it? There it is.
When you say where on your body.
It's like I feel my body. Is it in my face? Or is it in my shoulders or in my neck or in my hands or whatever? Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, in this case, I stood up and I felt it's in my hands. And I just, that's where I put it. And that's, I may not move my hands for the whole scene. I may keep them there to remind me the whole time, this is who I am, right? And then from there, I don't think about yes and. I don't think about game. I don't think, I love this podcast and I love listening to people talk. And when they start talking about game and they start talking about And this is where Miles and I fell out in actual improvisation, Miles Stroth and I, was he'd be like, yeah, but we got to drive for the drive for that. And I was like, I got no fucking, hey, man, I got no signposts ahead. You can't tell me where we're going because I don't like to play that way. I like to play completely in the moment. I have no fucking idea what I'm going to say. And that, truly, the one person I heard you interview, and I remember him saying it in class, was Joe Bill, where Joe Bill would say, man, you just reach out there, you grab something, and you start fucking with it. You start fucking with it, you know? For using your hands for object work in the scene, you know? And now I do that with physicality, and that's the character, nothing else matters.
Okay, so I want you just to help me out here, because yes. I have absolutely nothing. I'm afraid to work with you. I haven't worked with you in a long time. I don't know, because I look up to you. I feel like the times we've worked, it's like I've never reached the level that...
Oh, God.
I'm totally serious. All right. You know, I'm like, I could always do better. Because we did a show called Pent, which I got to tell you was one of my favorite shows we ever did. It didn't last long. We would rehearse, remember, an hour before.
Yeah.
You'd come in, teach us a four-square thing, and we'd go down. It was Noah, you, me.
Bill Baylor.
Was Katie Knotson?
There was five of us. That's why I called it Pent.
Okay.
Jimmy, Noah, Baylor, me.
Katie.
And was it Katie?
And then were you there when Pat O'Brien came and did it too?
No.
Okay. Because everyone else goes on to TV and Noah and I are left. But I love that. But I never felt like I was doing it right. Like I never felt like I...
See, that's... I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, go on.
I don't think there is a right, Jimmy. I mean, that's the thing that's always made me fucking insane about training centers,
mm-hmm.
is that the UCB has their style, mm-hmm. right? Great. That's the way those three guys play. And I promise you, all three of them don't play exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I know they don't. You know why? Because one's named Ian, and he lives in Ian's body. And one's named Matt, and he lives in Matt's body, etc. And Miles taught me that... If you sat down in class and said, we're going to watch The Godfather. We watch it. All right, get up. Improvise The Godfather. You're going to do it differently than what you just saw, right? And if you did that every fucking night, no matter how well you knew that movie, something is going to be different. You know, the voice is going to crack. You're going to stumble a little bit. A glass is going to smash in the background. Something is going to happen that's different. Because of the nature of the way this thing is done, it's not done in a vacuum, something is going to be different, and that's going to create something different.
Okay, so give me something to go out with. Or help me.
For beauty?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Do you generally go out and go, where are we, what are we doing?
Or I try to figure it out. I try to work off of you.
Yeah, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But I would like to take what you...
If I say, where did I put my scissors?
Okay.
What does that tell you?
That we're working together.
We're familiar.
Right.
We're very familiar, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You know? Otherwise, I'm going to ask a fucking stranger, where did I put my...
Right. But I feel like you've got something going out there, and I have nothing.
I see where you're coming from.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I see how that could be one option of a way to look at that.
Right.
You know? But I could also see it like, you know, oh, God. Mikey, you and the scissors. Again?
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
How many pairs is that this week? I don't know. Six?
You know? Okay.
You know what I mean? And we're together solving the problem. Don't solve the problem. Don't ask questions. Have an idea.
All right.
Have a goal. Where are you going to go? Fuck you.
Okay.
Play.
So if I want to do something physical, what would you recommend? I mean, just
if you were going to do something physical?
Yes.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, Jimmy, is that it's like, I mean, I could write that.
I don't want
now.
You to write it. You don't need to write it. But I mean,
I'm thinking that, like, for me, for you going forward, right? Is like, you hear a thing of beauty. Do like I do then, right?
Okay,
this is why I'm a terrible teacher. Because I go, I don't know, do what I do. You know? And that's a terrible fucking lesson for people. They go, what do you mean? Break my hand? Walk out? What is it? At what point am I quitting?
Right. Talk shit about Jon Stewart? I can do that.
That's okay. It's a good club. Trust me. I'll give you a name.
Okay, I got
everybody
something.
Everybody that's ever worked.
I got something. Okay, yeah. Great. So
what I was going to say is,
yeah.
You know, if you wanted, you could go, a thing of beauty. What does it mean? Beauty and the Beast. A rose. You know what I mean? I just do a word association. Mm. I have never thought that the suggestion is for the audience so that they know that we're telling the truth. We're really improvising. The suggestion is for us to go boink.
Mm.
off of nothing into something, you know? Or no suggestion, like TJ and Dave do. They don't need one, they just start. And they go, what's he doing? He's waiting.
Improv. Improv.
Waiting.
I'm waiting.
You're waiting?
I'm waiting.
Well, you'd be waiting all day.
Yeah.
The phone hasn't rung once today.
I know, Michael. You see what Bruce sent me?
Yeah.
Smell it. It's pink.
Why doesn't it smell pink? It just smells like a rose.
I don't know.
A pink by any other color is still just a pink. No.
Are you hungover today?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, who wouldn't be?
Oh my. You were crazy last night.
Was I embarrassing?
Yes.
Yeah, but was I embarrassing to you or was I embarrassing to me?
Oh, everybody.
Oh, please.
Oh my God.
Shut up.
You were like this kind of dancing?
Yeah, I was dancing.
Yes, you were.
So what?
I'm going to smoke.
Smoke and order more of the Barbicide.
I did that yesterday.
You did?
Yeah, nobody came in for
it. I'm telling you something. That Mexican that delivers our boxes is stealing shit.
Well, why don't you say something to him?
Oh, right.
Yes.
Yeah,
just right. Say, hey, Mexican, you're stealing from
me. Hey, and Mike, you're used to embarrassing yourself all the time. Yes. Why don't you say something to the
I always thought you kind of had something for him. You're like, oh, put it over here. Put it back in the closet.
Stop it.
Yes.
The innuendo. You know what it is? We need the paper, the neighborhood.
Yes.
We need to go door to door.
Yes.
Sticking them in the doors. Sticking them in the doors and ringing the doorbell. And if they answer the door, you run like hell.
Good old-fashioned ding-dong ditch.
That's it.
It worked as kids. Good marketing.
Sure did.
Am I getting fat? Does this hoodie make me look fat?
I think you should stop asking questions you don't want answers to. I think you look great, but you think you're fat, so it doesn't matter what I say.
That's why I'm gonna smoke more.
It's not a good plan. It's not the kind of skinny you want.
I'm just lonely.
Sit down, let me do you.
Oh, please.
You don't have to be alone. There's 4 million people in this city. Half of them are men, almost. Isn't that a bitch?
Yes.
Terrible.
You know what I'm going to do today? I'm just going to drop the ash right on the...
Careful.
Yes.
Well, it's not like there's any hair. Down there.
Down there? What was that?
On the ground.
Oh,
I'm saying it's not like there's any hair down on the ground.
Oh. I thought you were saying a bald joke.
No, that's why I said down there, because I wasn't talking about you.
What's the matter?
Nothing. It just makes me sad to hear you say that you're lonely.
I'm just lonely. You, Mr. One Night Stands, get drunk, do that, what is it, ecstasy or crystal? I don't know what it is.
I don't do crystal.
Yes,
I have all of my teeth. And that doesn't mean I'm not lonely. Why do you think I do it?
So you can do a one-night stand and not feel guilty in the morning.
Not true.
What kind
of that's why I do the X. Yes. Sorry. Yes. Correct.
What kind of high is that?
Oh. Imagine you're in a steam bath, and it has a vibrating chair in it.
Okay.
And you're eating your favorite sandwich. And your favorite show is on the TV, and the screen doesn't get fogged up. And someone's giving you a blowjob at the same time.
You gotta get me some. You gotta get me some. Come on, don't do this to me. You got me all excited.
Turn around.
I'm turning around. You've gotta hear it work.
Stop!
Okay.
Open your mouth. What's the difference? It takes 45 minutes for it to kick in anyway.
Don't they have time relief?
That is time release. 45 minutes.
Okay, okay.
Open your mouth. Just swallow it.
It doesn't taste like anything.
Don't chew it.
I just swallowed it. Went right down.
Good.
Yes. You're doing chew? Oh, three. You're crazy. You're totally crazy.
No, that's my tolerance is built up. But sit down.
I'm not going to end up. No, really. I'm not going to end up fucking a bottle of shampoo or anything, am I?
God, I hope so. Sit down.
You're terrible.
Sit down.
Okay.
Let me finish. We should probably close up and turn the lights off.
That'd be correct. That's.
Oh, we don't have to turn, off. I mean, like the outside light. Okay. We don't want anybody coming
okay,
in.
Okay, I'll do that.
Sit down. I'm going to stab you if you stand up.
Okay.
By accident and on purpose.
I haven't done. I'm just paranoid. I'm just getting paranoid.
Well, you get. That's your own paranoia. That's not the drugs.
Okay.
Don't blame that paranoia on ecstasy. Ecstasy gets enough bad shit.
I feel like I have to go to the bathroom, but.
Stop moving.
Okay.
You've never had your hair cut before?
Yeah, I've had my hair cut many times before. I do it myself now. I give myself a selfie, that's what I call it.
Okay.
I think it's kicking in.
Mm-hmm.
I can't feel my left side.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even care.
Well,
this is no big deal for you. But me, I haven't had drugs in 4 years.
Cut your own hair. It's fine.
What's the matter?
What do you think is the matter? You cut your own hair?
Yeah, well, just yes. The last time you did it, you screwed it up, and I didn't want to say anything. Everybody made fun of me. They called me Alfalfa from the Little Rascals. I didn't know what they meant.
I know who Alfalfa is.
Right, there was a big...
There's only one.
I got it.
There's only one Alfalfa. If someone calls you Spanky, they don't have to say Spanky from the Little Rascals or Buckwheat from the Little Rascals.
Well, I just didn't want to tell you. I didn't like what you did.
I wish you hadn't told me.
Is this what ecstasy is supposed to do? Because maybe we got some bad X.
No, it's not bad. It's really good. Just give it like 25 minutes and we won't care about this anymore.
I'm sorry I didn't say anything. I know we've been friends for a long time.
It's just that old thing where it's like you come into the shop and how do you select who you want to cut your hair? You get the one with the worst hair because that means they're the one who cuts everyone else's hair. And you're always the one with the worst hair. And my hair looks so good. I think it's kicking in. A little bit. I love you. I don't care. It's all right. I'm just...
Did you ever think maybe you're not cut out for this business?
Yeah. Yes. You know, when I was little, my family went to Disney World.
I've heard this story.
Huh?
I've heard this story.
Oh.
But tell it me anyways. Because I feel guilty.
It's the one about the topiaries.
Yes. And you ran to the topiaries.
And there was an elephant with a ball balancing on the end of its trunk, and it was a bush.
Right.
Shaped like an elephant with a ball on its trunk, and I thought, my God.
I should be a hair designer.
This is what I want to do. No, that was what I wanted to do. And my father said, shut up.
Because he was a drunk and he was in the military. And he didn't understand you. And then you left. You left Iowa and you came
problem
here.
Problem is, I think he did understand me. That's the problem.
No, that's the problem. He didn't understand you and you're holding on to it.
I think he did understand
How?
Me and he hated me, which is worse.
When you graduated from cosmetology school, he never showed up.
No. But he didn't come to my sister's nursing school graduation either. And now she's a nurse. No, I deliver babies. No, you don't. Mothers deliver babies. You stand there. You wipe blood and shit off of babies. Let's call it what it is. You run a kennel for humans.
You know what I think your problem is? You don't understand your importance. You make people happy. You change the world more than your sister ever could. We save lives on a daily basis. We save more lives in a day than your sister does in a week.
More.
You're very important to this salon.
Thank you.
It has such a great following because of you. I know we've been slow the last couple weeks, but...
It's the weather.
Yes. People have noticed your behavior, your drinking, your fits of anger.
Well, I don't hide it. I'm not trying to hide it.
I know, it's just not good for business. I kind of feel like I'm an anchor tied to your ankle and you're just dragging me around.
Like a ball and chain?
Yes. Ever want to know what my dream was that I squashed to work here?
No, but tell me.
Flamingo dancer. Not doing it, I wanted to teach it. Get my own franchise. They have a thing.
Did you say flamingo dancer? Yes. I think you mean flamenco.
No, flamingo. It's big in Florida.
It's a ripoff of Jazzercise. There's only two franchises.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a combination between flamenco dancing, which you thought I was talking about, and Jazzercise and Zumba all together.
Why do you stay friends with me? I'm such an asshole.
I mean, you're lonely. I told you. I'm afraid. I'm afraid to go out. Make new friends.
Well, you're going to be really paranoid in like 15 minutes, and then you're going to feel great. But really paranoid.
You know why I'm friends with you, really? Because you make me feel better about myself.
Thank you.
Well, I didn't mean it like that. Like, I feel superior to you.
Thank you anyway. I'm going to stop smoking today. Today is the day.
Not a good day. Right. Smoking is awesome on ecstasy.
How about I stop smoking at 12:30? That's in a half an hour.
I don't think that's going to be a good time. Like I said, later on when we go to the club, you're going to want some smokes. And then you're going to run out of smokes, and then you're going to bum some smokes, and then you're going to be, who knows what you're going to be smoking. Don't worry about it. Don't make any life-altering decisions in the next 6 to 8 hours.
Okay. I like that.
Can I finish?
Go ahead.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. I wouldn't want anyone but you to touch my hair. Cutting it's different, but touching it, go right ahead. That was a joke.
Where'd I put my scissors?
I was trying to hurt you.
Did you see where I did with my scissors?
I don't know. Why don't you check over by your station? Oh my God, it's kicking in.
I'm feeling it.
Oh my God.
There you are.
I hope I get a contact high off your ecstasy, even though I have ecstasy.
You won't need a contact.
I'm just going to close my eyes and trust. Oh my God.
What?
It feels like you're putting Play-Doh in my hair.
I'm not.
Okay. I once ate Play-Doh.
You can, you know.
I know.
It's just dough.
Yes. It's Play-Doh.
To play with.
Yes.
Colorful.
There was this guy in the club Sidetracks.
Ugh. What was it? Hate Sidetracks. I always liked the manhole.
I know. Well, I went back to his house and he had a whole thing of Play-Doh and I don't know what I was on, but I just ate it because I was so hungry.
Did he have kids?
No, he didn't have kids.
Creeper. Yeah.
I didn't even think about that.
Maybe he had kids and he just didn't tell you. You know, a lot of guys, they get married,
yes. Yeah.
They have whole families. Remember Ryan?
Yes.
He had a family.
Used to work here.
Yeah. He had a family. A family. A family. figures on the back window and all that. Family.
Oh my God.
Soccer games, PTA meetings, in-laws.
And he was like the most, oh my God. I came in here one day early. He had some guy in the back. He was doing him from behind.
Yeah. I like I said, the day you hired him,
wait,
never trust a gay Republican.
What did you think of that?
You
had a big smile on your face. Like,
you know what, Jimmy? I listen to the podcast all the time, and I hear people go, it was good. And they're afraid to say what they really... actually really fucking loved it.
Okay.
I had a great time. But that's the thing, man, is it's like I don't... I think that we get really caught up in how much do they react vocally. And I don't think that it's called improv comedy nerd. Mm-hmm. And since the first class that I took that actually spoke to me was Martin DeMott's class at Second City. And he said, we're not here for comedy. But don't worry about that. That's later. We are here for, I want you to believe me right now. We're going to make this up on the spot, and I want you to believe me. And I think we were believable, as much as we could be. I mean, obviously, we're going to fall into a little cliche here and there.
Right.
Because it's easy. Mm-hmm. And you go, I don't want to do this, but I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because sometimes it feels good, too, to
right.
like fuck around with the old cliche, and I hope I don't hurt anybody's feelings. Mm-hmm. I'm just playing, mm-hmm. you know. That's my long answer, too. I actually really fucking enjoyed it.
Was there anything you would have liked to have done differently?
I don't think so. I mean, okay. I don't think there was anything that, like, I look at it and I go, well, what are the big things? Like, it's just us. There's no business. You're smoking. We're taking ecstasy. I'm cutting your hair. You cut your own hair. We get in a little fight.
Mm-hmm.
No, I wouldn't change any of that. I think that it all happened organically. So why would I change it, you know?
All right, so we're going to take some questions from the audience about
sure.
what we just did, or if they have a question for
sure.
you. I know we're running late.
Yeah, I know late. We're running late. I'm
so,
sorry.
Yeah, Jerry.
Yeah, Dan, you've talked a lot about how various things you've tried, you went to it thinking, I can't do this. How do you feel now about yourself?
Good. Yeah, really good.
What's the sadness about?
It's not.
Joy?
Yeah. You know, I feel like I'm finally in a place where I feel like we could have done this for an hour.
I feel like
we could have done this scene for an hour. We'd have had to eventually start fucking tripping, you know, but just for the reality of the drug. But I feel like I don't owe you anything other than you believe me. When I teach, which is rarely, I teach, this should be, the audience is walking down the sidewalk, sees an open window and stops to look in and goes, well, fuck, that's how I behave. And then they move on and that's it. That's the only thing I owe you is I'm making this up on the spot and you believe that it's real life, right? So I think I've finally gotten to a place in the projects I've worked on in the last year, the big ones I've worked on like Veep and Legit and The Heat. I went into all three of those going, holy fuck, I don't belong, they're going to find out. And I went, you're lying to yourself, stop it, back up. They wouldn't have hired you if they didn't want you. And I went, okay, then I'm gonna attack it like that little kid on The Simpsons that went, you know, Henderson, you're up, and he goes at it, fucking, you know, claws and teeth, you know. And I just went, I'm just going to dive in like I did at that first jelly. At Second City, when I said, I'm going to take a chance. It's Braveheart, Metallica, and I'm going to do it. And if you don't laugh, fine. You know, I'm going to be happy with the fact that I believe that what I did was realistic.
And that's all that matters to
that's
you.
That's all I'm trying to
when
do.
When you go into that, you get Heat, the movie with Melissa McCarthy, and
mm-hmm.
you had a huge part.
Yeah,
and
where
got
I played
great
the albino.
Notice.
Yeah, played the albino.
Yeah. Do you pick up the phone and call people and say, oh my God, I'm walking in, I feel like I want to...
I just found out that I'm not the first choice for this. They already had this wig fitted for another actor, and he couldn't be here yesterday, and they flew me in today. I'm a second choice. Okay, well, you're first choice today. Thank you. Goodbye. You know,
so you'll call somebody else and say, hey, you know... Yeah. I feel like a piece of shit, or I feel like I don't deserve here. What should I do?
Yeah, and sometimes I get a guy who goes, remind me what my part is in the movie, and I go, that's not helpful today. Today I need a way to fix why it is that I'm going to beat myself up and talk myself out of doing a good job, you know? And
why do you think we do that?
I think we all do it.
I agree.
I think all actors do it.
Right. Do you think a Tina Fey does it?
Yeah.
Okay.
She better be.
She just does it less, don't you think?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I could answer in a dickish way that inflates my ego, or I could say, I don't know, because I really don't know. But I'm guessing she probably does it about as much as we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you look at the inside the actor studios and things like that, the people sit there and they talk about, and I thought that was the last job I was ever going to get. And you go, you won 2 more Oscars. Like, you know, that Tom Hanks has any fears about his career, that Susan Sarandon ever had a fear about her career, or... You know, I've gotten to know a lot, living in Los Angeles, I've gotten to know a lot of people that have been in show business for a very long time and have had very long, successful careers. And every time I see them, how are you? Well, I just feel like today's the day. And they mean today's the day that they go, hi, I'm sorry, we're going to need that Emmy back.
Right.
And all that credit you got in the 70s for being on that great TV show, we're sorry.
Right.
We got to take that all back.
Or we figured you out. You're not that talented. You're going to have to leave.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Another question? Right over here.
So you were talking about how you did the ETC show and how you were up against the wall. And kind of scared, which I can relate to. And then you talked about, like, when Jimmy was talking, and you said that you don't like any rules. You just like to play in the moment.
Yeah.
How do you, like, get from being scared and then going out there and, like, not expecting anything, I guess? How do you just, like...
Well, at some point, like I said, you know, what happened last night was nobody actually said, go ahead, man, go. But one of the cast members was behind me, and he chuckled at something, and I turned around and looked at him, and he gave me, like, a big smile. And I went, that was almost like him going, it's all right, man, go ahead. He might not even have been aware of it. But I needed it in that moment. I needed to turn around and see someone go, it's all right, man. And I went... okay, thanks. And I went out for the next scene. And in the next scene, I was going, oh, what am I doing? What am I doing? What am I doing? And I made a choice, and I got a laugh. And in that moment, I was just that regular old improviser that's going, oh, a laugh, good. And I wasn't playing the way that I like to play. I mean, sincerely, today doing this scene, if you guys didn't laugh a single bit, later, backstage, I'd be like, Jimmy, we fucking killed it. Because that means you guys are going, whoa, what the, you know?
So if you're not getting laughed, it's still good.
Complete silence?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. But... squeak, 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 stomp, stomp, stomp. That's bad. But
so
complete
what's
silence is, I don't want to fucking move. I don't want to
Because it's so
anything,
believable.
Because they're wrapped up. Go watch TJ and Dave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and listen to the crowd in that show. One, they're very quiet in that show. TJ and Dave are. So the audience has to be, but after, what is it, 10 years now? 10 years
yeah,
that they've been doing that show? After 10 years of doing that show, the audience has learned that they have to sit really quiet or they're going to miss something. If you go, you're going to miss the little, you know, Dave makes a little smirk or something, and you're going to miss it because you're looking at your cup or you're fucking around, you know? They've earned that right from their audience and from the thousands of fans they've gotten nationwide, you know?
Let's take another question. Right here.
How has improv helped you prepare for your scripted roles?
Well, it's a good question. When I first got into improv, it was because of scripted roles. I was going to school at Florida State and doing a play at Glass Menagerie, and I was playing the gentleman caller, obviously, because of my looks. We bumped into the table, and the unicorn's supposed to fall off the table, and the horn's supposed to fall, you know, break off. The whole fucking table went over, rolled towards the orchestra pit, everything came off. The next line is supposed to be, what was that? She says, the table. Did anything fall off? And I delivered my lines as written, because Tennessee Williams knows better than I. Tennessee Williams didn't know what the fuck he was talking about because this stage was raked and there you go. And I went, well, I got to find out a way to get through this, right? So I began to follow improv for that reason. So in that respect, when it comes to a show like Veep, right, that process, they give you a script which is like 60 pages for a half-hour show. That's unprecedented.
And that's a lot?
That's a lot. That's twice as much as you normally have for a 30-minute show. You have a page a minute. And you sit down, read through the whole thing, then get up on your feet, read through the scene, put it down, now improvise the scene. So in that respect, it's very clear when improv is done. I'm improvising. In Legit, Jim writes...
Jim Jefferies.
And it's based the creator, on his three brothers, the star. Right? Yeah, Jim is an Australian stand-up, and I play Steve Nugent, his best friend. And DJ Qualls plays my brother, who is stricken with a very advanced stage muscular dystrophy, all based on real events in Jim's life. And most of the show is, too. And in that, Jim writes these very specific moments, these very specific scripts, but encourages us to have the freedom to, in the moment, add a bit here or there. Now, what improv has taught me in that case is you don't do what so many comedies do, which is the line is, you know, Steve, where you been? And I go, I was out at the park, man. I don't wanna talk about it. Come on, mate, you can talk to me, right? And in a lot of comedies, it would be, Steve, where you been? Ah, man, I was riding a roller coaster. And then I was throwing a bunch of shit against the wall until something funny comes out of my fucking mouth, and then they'll just edit around it, which is a useless waste of time, in my opinion, and an affront to what I call improv. Sorry, that's the way I feel. Mm-hmm. So we don't do it that way. We do it economically. Veep doesn't do it that way either. It's very, you know, laser focused, right? So we will, you know, give the freedom to improvise in the moment, to come up with a line that might be an alternate to what's there, but it's still on the same page, but it's just a different version of the line, right?
Are you coming back, your character, the senator on Veep? Do you
yes.
know?
Okay. Yes. So for season 3 of Veep, I come back for that. And season 2 of Legit starts, by the time this goes out, it will have already begun. It begins February 26th.
What do you attribute to your success? I mean, in the last couple of years?
Well, we talked about this backstage, so yeah. I'm going to say what I said backstage.
Okay.
Because that's the way I feel about it.
Okay.
But I believe, and Jim Jefferies is the one who got me wise to this, which is, look, there's a lot of talented people. It's not about talent. And it's not about hard work, you know, because there's a lot of talented people working really hard. And it's not about luck, because luck would be walking down the street and going, oh my God, $1 million. Wow. Or the lottery, you know, that's luck. Fortune is you've worked really hard, you have talent, and someone goes, hey, you, come here. And fortune comes your way. And I like that he makes that differentiation. And I've taken that upon myself to say, I've been fortunate is what it is. Because I look around me, I see guys like you. I see, as I said backstage, I look at a guy like Paul Grandi, who I think is one of the greatest improvisers I've ever seen improvise. And rarely gets put in that group of people. You know, people talk about, who's your favorite improviser? Oh, it's TJ. And I like, you know, Pat O'Brien. And I like that. You know, and how often does Paul Grandi get put in that group? Trust me, he's one of the best fucking improvisers ever. Miles Stroth is another one of those guys. And neither of those guys got those big breaks. What? Why? Are they not good enough? Are they too ugly? Are they? No, it's just the fortune didn't come their way. That stroke of fortune on the right day at the right time, you know?
What advice would you give an improviser today?
You know, I mean, I think the first thing that Martin DeMott said to our class, which was, I don't want you to be funny. I want you to be believable. What's funny to you may not be funny to them, and what's funny to you may not be funny to him, and may not be funny to her, but it's funny to her, and it's not funny to him. You know? So don't be the dictator of what's funny. Be the canvas, be the paint, and all that, and let them tell you whether or not it's funny or tragic. You know? Their life experiences will inform their opinion of what is what.
What do you tell people like, oh, you did the scene, it didn't get laughs?
If people tell me I did a scene...
Or a student. I did a scene, it didn't get any laughs.
I go, okay. You know, if I'm sitting in the room and I'm watching it, I go,
Yeah, I fact, it did not get laughs. Fact. You also didn't fall off the stage. Are we going to talk about all the things that didn't happen while you're doing that scene? Or are we going to talk about the things that did happen? I believed you. You reached out and touched that apple, and I saw the fucking apple. And I'm telling you, I know from watching a guy like Bob Dassey, the way he used to, you know, probably still does, do object work, that if nothing else, and Dassey was hilarious, but if nothing else, if I look up and I see you grabbing a hold of objects around the space, and I believe that you're actually touching them, I'm engaged, and I'm on board. And if I'm not, I'm not the audience for improv in the first place.
Dan Bagatelle, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jim.
And thank you. Thank you very much. When can we see Legit? When does it premiere?
Legit premieres on FXX February 26th. That's season two, and the season one DVDs come out February 25th.
And Veep?
And Veep premieres April 6th.
Great. So check those out. Thank you guys for coming. Check out our podcast on feralaudio.com. Also, we're starting our new season, which will start in March. And so look for that. Also, go to jimmycarain.com. Check out my improv blog and my award-winning classes. I've got a two-person tune-up workshop coming up on April 4th, so check that out. We also have flyers for that. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
And there you have it, another episode of Improv Nerd in the can, and I was not wrong, was I? This was a really special episode. And when Dan talked about what he would say to Jon Stewart, I just thought that was just a beautiful moment. And when he started to well up and feel joy, I got to say, I was so jealous that he can access his emotions. And I loved coming clean and telling him how I felt when he got The Daily Show, that I was jealous. But as you know, I'm a very jealous person. What an episode. I want to thank the good people at Stage 773 for being our home base, for treating us like such rock stars. I want to thank Justin Hamby for stepping in for Ben Caprero at the live show, and I want to thank Ben Caprero for editing this and making this sound so slick and professional. As you know, we're on Feral Audio. It's a podcast collective. We are on there, and I'm going to name drop because I'm insecure. Chelsea Peretti, Dan Harmon, Matt Dwyer, Todd Berry. Go check it out, feralaudio.com. If you want more information about me and my Improv Nerd blog, which will give you tips to becoming a better improviser, also any information about me and my award-winning classes, The Art of Slow Comedy, go to jimmycarain.com. I want to, and please go to our Facebook page. This is very important for me because my self-esteem is tied into how many likes I get. Go to Improv Nerd and like our fan base. Our Facebook fan page. So do that. I want to thank our sponsor, and that is Hotel Lincoln, and for putting Dan up there at the beautiful Hotel Lincoln. And I also want to thank you for listening and all the wonderful emails you send me, because sometimes you feel like you're in a vacuum, and it's really nice. So feel free to reach out to me and give me some feedback. And thank you for listening, and until next time, remember, walk, don't run. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah.
Hello, I'm Kyle Ayers. I'm the host of Never Seen It, the podcast where comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we give them a read in studio. This is a clip I want to play for you guys from an episode where Langston Kerman rewrites Scarface. He's never seen it, but he wrote a script based on what he thinks he knows about it, and here's a clip. Give it a listen.
All right, Scarface, The New Frontier. Interior, happening discotheque. Remember when we called clubs discotheques? LOL, the 70s were crazy. Night. The crowd bustles with young, hot Mexicans who are supposed to be Cuban, and all are dressed in butterfly collared shirts and pants that look like JNCO jeans, and pleated khakis had a really weird baby. There's sex in the air, and Poppy wants a whiff.
Oh my God.
Scarface, 22 to 45.
Like he's a television audience demographic.
Devilishly handsome. Not even a little bit Italian looking, so get that out of your dumb brain. Walks through the crowd with the confidence of a man who's going on MTV Cribs with the Ying Yang Twins one day. Does he actually have a scar on his face? Fuck no. Why would you even ask that? That's not important. What's important is that he is not at all a problematic stereotype and that he has come for his cocaine. As he approaches the red rope of the VIP, pronounced Ve A Pay in Spanish,
oh my gosh.
He spots his dear friend, who is almost certainly going to become his enemy by the end of the film, Smooth Skin. Scarface yells out his signature line.
Ciao, Bella. It's me, Scarface.
Oh my God.